जय माँ. सो वी आर कंटिन्यूइंग विद द भागवत पुराण एंड वन स्टोरी एट अ टाइम. इट्स फुल ऑफ स्टोरीज एंड एज वी सी ईच ऑफ दीज स्टोरीज इज बोथ स्पिरिचुअली एंड फ्रॉम द अकल्ट पॉइंट ऑफ व्यू वेरी प्रोफाउंड. द मदर एंड शिरबिंद बोथ हैव सेड दैट दे ऑथर्स ऑफ द भागवत वेयर सीयर्स and they saw truths which are very profound truths, mystic truths, occult truths, and they have given to us in the form of the whole story form. And it's generally taken as the story of Krishna, but Krishna comes later. It's like when all the artists have done their work, then Krishna will come. So Sri Krishna will come toward the end of the Bhagavad Puran. So it is the Leela of Hari, of Narayan. And Narayan here is the Purushottama, the divine who is beyond both the mutable and the immutable, which is what we see in the Gita. Okay, so today the story which we have in Canto 8 is the story of the elephant and the crocodile, Gajendra. Some people may have heard this story. Many of us have grown up in the tradition where this story is narrated and we have just imbibed it. The story as it goes in its very simple format is that there is a king of elephants, Gajendra. So one day he is going to take a bath in the water, clear waters. Now this is not an earthly realm, very, very clearly, because there is the parvat which is described, the Kut parvat. It's full of gems, full of wonderful things. The whole description is not of this world. Even it says that 1,000 years they would have a fight, the elephant and the crocodile. So what is being described? And we'll come to that later. But we should understand that the story is too deep and profound. Of course, even as it is understood as a dumb elephant, his prayer reaching the Lord and intervening is a wonderful thing. But in this story, we have something even more. So Gajendra is the king of the elephants in whatever world it is, and he is wants to take his whole herd with all his queens and children and all the herd for a bath. He is taking a bath in a clear lake, and there they go, and they, as they play, he is the king, so he first gives bath to all of them. Then he himself goes and he is enjoying the whole play. So while he is enjoying, after he has given bath to everyone and everyone has come out, now he wants to take a bath himself. He is a king, so he will take a royal bath. As he enters, there is a crocodile out there. So crocodile is very annoyed because king, imagine, elephant with all his retinue is coming and taking a bath, and so it gets very disturbed, and then it attacks Gajendra. Normally crocodiles will not do that because they understand it's a very formidable creature. Elephants are symbols of strength. So it attacks the elephant, and the elephant is now caught by the foot. So as the story goes, this part many people are not aware, because we receive it in a very simple way that he was caught and he prayed to the Lord, but he fights for some 1,000 years. So obviously it is not earthly time, because there are different time space dimensions according to the Puranas, and each time space dimension has its own time frame. For example, we have spoken about it, but it's important to understand that these are not mythological stories which are being told to us, all kinds of concoctions. So when we are very happy, how does time fly? Flies very fast. Sometimes 1 year may fly so fast, and if you are progressing fast, it may be even more speed. And when we are depressed, when we are unhappy, then time goes very, very slow. When we are in a state of struggle, sometimes 1 year can seem like 100 years. That's how people experience time. So he is in that state where he is experiencing, when the Rishi writes that 1,000 years they fought. So he is describing a state in which he had entered. Now what happens is, as the fight continues, the elephant is formidable creature. It's a symbol of strength. But what happens, water is not his place. Crocodile is in the water. So crocodile, being from the water, is fighting on his own turf, familiar turf. For elephant, it is not his familiar turf. So as the story goes, see, all these little details have their own meaning. The elephant begins to lose his strength and the crocodile begins to gain his strength. Because this is his family. He draws energy from all this activity, but elephant is losing his strength. So there comes a time when Gajendra, the elephant, feels that he cannot handle this anymore. Then what he does, he prays to the Supreme Lord. So when he prays to the Supreme Lord, it's very well documented narrated in many of the bhajans. Surdas bhajans, it's there, and we have grown up in that culture where, you know, Gajendra's prayer. So when he prays to the Lord appears, and when he appears, he kills the crocodile and he saves Gajendra. Now this is a basic story, very simple framework, and even as such it's a beautiful story that he hears the dumb prayer of even a animal. So what to speak of human beings? So it's a very beautiful, sweet story. But the story is much deeper. Because actually in the Purana, the prayer of the elephant is described. And described in quite detail. He addresses the Supreme Personality of the Lord as someone who is seated in the heart, who is there in the whole creation. So it's not just an elephant. It seems more like a human who has fallen to a level where he still retains something, and he is suddenly, that moment of crisis, suddenly he is reminded of his prayer. So why this little detail is important? Because sometime when we read the Bhagavad Puran, earlier also we read a story, and people often believe that, is there retrogression possible from a human to an animal birth? Well, not quite. So what is this story about? So now we come to the whole narration of the story, the whole story. This is the framework. So as the story goes, there are these two. One is a Gandharva, whose name is Huhu. And the other is a king called Indradyumna. Indradyumna name itself is very interesting. He is full of light, effulgence, and he is like Indra, a master. So Indradyumna is the one. First we'll talk about Huhu's story. Hu is a Gandharva, and one day when he is in a goes into a lake, as we know that these water bodies, they are the bodies where Gandharvas and many of these beings who are of the mid-world are present. And that's why it's often advised that don't go alone, or when those isolated pools, they can be pretty risky, because these are beings of the mid-world and they like to play pranks. They don't feel emotions like we feel. For them to just pull somebody's leg and somebody drowns, it doesn't matter to them. They are just playing, having fun. So there is a rishi who enters the water to take bath. While this Gandharva and all his, with all his family members, they are enjoying in that little pool. So when the rishi goes to take bath, this Gandharva who wants to play a prank. So what he does is pulls the leg. Exactly, you know, because he's hidden in the water, he pulls the leg. So when he pulls the leg, he's a rishi. He gets annoyed and he gives him a shrap. That's the power of, you know, those who have mastered the word. They don't have weapons, but their word comes true. Because they mastered their word. This is the power of their tapasya which goes into the word. Of course, it's not good to give shrap, but anyway, he gives a shrap. And he gives a shrap that you are playing in the water. Okay, you become a creature of the water. Live in water forever. So this Gandharva falls and he becomes the crocodile. So this is the story of the crocodile. What about Gajendra? Gajendra is a king, Indradyumna. So he's a king, and after some time he gets disenchanted, detached, and he says, now I have done what I had to do. So it's his time when he should meditate upon the divine. So he's meditating upon the Supreme Personality of the Godhead. Just then, Agastya Rishi comes. And August Rishi seeks to stay in his ashram. He doesn't have much of an ashram. It's basically he himself, but there's a little bit place here and there. And he doesn't notice. He is lost in his inner trance. And when August Rishi sees this, very interestingly, this king is described as a man from the Dravid land, and he is a Tamil king. Tamil king. Yeah, he is a Tamil king. That's how it is described in the Purana. And they put, if you write in English, then you have to put over a line. He is a Tamil king from the Dravid land of Aryavart. So, Dravid was not South India as we understand. Dravid means a land surrounded by three sides by water. So that's how it came to be known as Dravid land. It was not like they are some separate group and Aryans are separate. And who is there? August Rishi. So it fits very well because August Rishi lived here. He came from the, crossed the Vindhyas and then he was living here. So August Rishi is going around and he sees King Indradyumna, who is a Tamil, and he curses him. He also curses him. You are lost. You don't see who is coming around and who is going. So, you have become so dull, insensitive. You take a dull and insensitive birth. So, he becomes the elephant king Gajendra. Now, it may sound very strange. Why is August Rishi angry? Why should he be angry at poor fellow? He is lost in reverie. Oh, see, this is the beauty of the story. You have to go through the whole cycle. So, he is already a devotee of the Lord. He accepts everything as a devotee of the Lord. He says, if this is what has happened, there must be some mystery of it. And he becomes like an elephant. So, in the elephant herd, he's enjoying, he's having many, you know, wives and children and all this. Now, he's the king there. Instead of the king of the human lot, he is the king of the elephant herd. And so, Gajendra, the elephant, enters and crocodile. So these two creatures, one a Gandharva and the other a human, they enter into this kind of a meeting where the crocodile grabs the elephant's feet. He cries because of his previous tapasya. He remembers his prayer. Suddenly at that point of time, he remembers the prayer. And then he cries. The Lord comes, severs the head of crocodile and frees Gajendra. And then Gajendra says a wonderful prayer to the Lord. This we have heard. But what happens after that? And what is the story about? It sounds okay, fine. At the best, he's a devotee and he has prayed. But people can raise objections. No? After all, crocodile was doing his dharma. Nothing wrong with what he was doing. Why should he be punished? People can raise many such questions which are relevant today. But the story is very profound. Both occult and spiritual point of view. So we start now back from the beginning. Why he becomes a crocodile? Because though he is a Gandharva, he should have at least this much measure. You play in the water, that's your nature. But there is a Rishi and you are supposed to, because he is a higher being and he doesn't respect, he gets cursed. Which many people would say it's okay, he enters the body of a crocodile, he has to live in the body of a crocodile. But the moment he gets severed by Narayan, the Lord. You may say Lord Vishnu, but there is a distinction between the two. So what happens when he is severed by the Lord? So when the divine destroys something, what does he do? He absorbs back and entire whatever be the sins or whatever be the excesses, they are destroyed. And he goes back to a higher status from where he fell. So this is the first aspect of the story, that actually the crocodile, he goes back to his kingdom, but because he has been killed by no one else but the Lord himself. That's why it's called as Uddhar. So Uddhar is not killing. Now we can take that up also. It's very interesting that why when a liberated person, so we can touch upon it because there are questions which people raise. So who is killing you? Why the person is killing you? And who is being killed? And why is being killed? By what means? All this goes into the entire occult understanding of Indian thought. First of all, as a starter, any shrap that is given by a Rishi, study it. It turns out to be for the good. I had once made a whole collection of all the shraps. When a Rishi, who is an exalted being, tells you something, it may sound like he is saying in anger. He is cursing you. But that curse invariably turns out for your good. One classic example is when Hanuman's mother Anjani, she is cursed by who else? Durvasa again. Because she is very, restless. She's trying to take care of him, but she doesn't know how to take care. So sometimes things drop off from her hand, etc., etc. She is a damsel, apsara in the swarga. And suddenly, Durvasa Rishi says, you don't know how to control yourself. You are extremely restless. I curse you to become a monkey. She does become a monkey. But imagine, compare the fate of being a damsel in swarga and the mother of Hanuman. So this is the beauty of the shrap. So all shraps, if you study them carefully, King Parikshit is given a shrap. In this Bhagavat itself, you will see shrap. King Parikshit is given a shrap that 7 days later you are going to die. Again, by a Rishi Putra, the son of a Rishi. What happens? The result of that shrap is Bhagavatam. And the liberation of King Parikshit through the story of Srimad Bhagavat. So, while when we read, we may draw a conclusion, oh, the Rishi got angry and he shouted. When the Rishi is moved to release a certain energy, a very strong energy, it looks like anger. But because his consciousness carries within itself no tendency to harm. So no harm will come, only good will come. And I have given only two examples out of many, many shraps, which once I had just made a note for myself that how these shraps, because this was my question, that why they are getting annoyed and why they are getting angry. Like anyone else, these were my questions too. And then I saw that, well, all shraps ultimately turn out for the person's good. So here he gets release. What about the shrap of to Indradyumna? Rishi Agastya is given a shrap for no fault. At least this Brahmin fellow, this crocodile, the Gandharva, was at fault, very clearly at fault. He may not deserve a shrap, but nevertheless one can say, okay, he did something wrong. Why did Agastya Rishi? Now these are not questions raised in the Bhagavat and people don't answer it. These are my, because as a child I grew up reading this story and I had my own queries. So I used to question and I used to get my own answer. So I'm just sharing the answer that why did Agastya Rishi curse Indradyumna and what happened ultimately of this curse? So why did he curse? Same story you will see in Gautama Nari Ahilya. Ahilya is cursed. Why she is cursed by Gautama Rishi? That you are such an exalted person. You are meditating with me and we are rising together. At your stage, if you get moved by, actually she knew who is Indra, she had recognized him, but the prospect of becoming, even for a small time, the consort of Indra, or to be touched by Indra in a certain way, was too tempting, and because the husband was not here. So the whole story was that when you are exalted and you commit something, the risk of repercussion is so much more higher. I'll give an example. If you read Shobindo's letters on yoga, Shobindo will not say you must do this. If you don't do this, this is going to happen. It doesn't say like that. And this was asked to Shobindo that tell us clearly, do it or don't do it. Why are you giving us freedom? So he gave a very interesting answer. He says, if I give it like a command to you and you don't follow it, the repercussions are far greater. Because he's a divine being. If he gives a command, you don't follow. So he has left it to our freedom. For basically it complicates the path, but then it's also true that it saves us from the cosmic forces which may act in ways which we cannot reckon with. So that is the word of the Rishi, it counts so much when you don't listen. We know what happened to India. We have another example, classic example. Shobindo had sent Duraiswami Iyer to ask that, well, tell the whole group, Nehru, Gandhi, etc., to accept Cripps' proposal. And what did Gandhi say? He said, oh, it's a post-dated check. Let him be busy with his spiritual life. We will take our own decision. Now, till today, we are bleeding. So, when a Rishi says something, Shobindu cautioned Duraiswami Iyer, do it like a Nishkam Karma, precisely. Because if you put that stress that it is Sri Aurobindo, you don't know who is Sri Aurobindo, then you are putting another kind of pressure. So the shrap has its own power. Okay, fine. So why was Indradyumna given a shrap? Precisely because though he is in trance, some kind of trance, he should be an exalted person. Indradyumna's tapasya is described in a very fascinating way. In his tapasya, he has become completely oblivious for everything around. He is only focused on the Supreme Personality. There is something which is missing out here. And that missing element is that he is not aware of things which are around. He is in his supreme state, just like Ahilya. You should be aware that what is happening. August Rishi has come. There are seekers who have come. They need water. They are thirsty. They have come for food. And you are in your own state of personal exaltation. Nevertheless, we may debate whether he should be given a curse or not. But what happens after the shrap is very interesting. I haven't found this in any other story of, all the divine stories that I have read. Plenty of them. What happens later on. And I am saying what happens later on is very, very interesting because I know that this is a real, real thing which happens when you serve the divine. So what happens when Gajendra is, we know now, he is caught and he prays to the Lord. He has forgotten his prayers. Why? Because there was a part in him which totally was oblivious of the Rishi, and he went into the yoni of an elephant. He suffers, he cries, the Lord comes and liberates him. Where does he go? Because of this prayer to the Lord, as the Bhagavad says, Lord Vishnu called him to his own abode, where he developed all the four hands like Lord Vishnu. It is called a Sarupya Mukti. So we have heard about Sadharma, Salokya, Samipya. You develop the same form as the Lord. And he became like a real, not a fabricated image, a real image of Lord Vishnu, who acts like Lord Vishnu. It's by the permission of Lord Vishnu. I mean, he is independently Vishnu, even in his swarup, even in his external form. Now, this is the leap he takes while going through the process of Gajendra. So the next question is why he had to go through this process. Now comes the deeper truth, the deepest truth of yoga. Some people will relate to it, those who are into this journey. Sri Aurobindo's yoga, they will relate. First phase, when you are progressing, you are evolving, you are almost concentrated. But you have forgotten something. There are parts in your nature which you have not seen or you have shut your eyes. Like Indradyumna, you have not seen in your nature. Now what happens? The Lord pushes you to acknowledge, to see what it is. There in one of Sri Aurobindo's letters, somebody asked that, is it like psychoanalysis? He said, no, in psychoanalysis you plunge into the darkness without the light. Here you go but with the light. This is exactly what happens to Gajendra. He takes an elephant birth, he is the king of a herd, he is mating, he is doing everything, but he is conscious inside of something which he carries from the past. But he has to bring it out. He doesn't bring out. He is caught. So you see, you can be caught in a state in yoga where you have apparently what is called as a fall. Why the fall takes place? Because you have left out something. We know in Savitri there is a whole description. He makes our fall a means to greater rise. But again and again, fall is not the way to a greater rise, but it's a process. It described in Savitri, page 34, beautifully, that you cannot all the time remain concentrated. Certainly not in a world-transforming yoga. There are parts which will pull you back. Now, you may feel angry at yourself. You may feel stupid about yourself. Whatever you may feel, but you are there. Now, what is to be done now? Ideal is, as a conscious yogi, you have to keep invoking the Lord and go there. What if you forget? There are people who actually forget. And when you forget, the Lord puts you in such a crisis that suddenly all this comes out, the prayer of Gajendra. Actually, the scripture mentions he had forgotten, but somewhere he knew. So he's in a double state. He's enjoying the king of the earth, but he's also unhappy because he has remember, but he wants to remember. His consciousness still contains something of that kind. And suddenly there is a crisis and the consciousness remembers everything in a moment of crisis. And now, because he has gone through this process of catharsis and purification, how even it's described in detail. Actually, it's the whole yoga described in detail. So when Gajendra is caught inside in the crocodile, so initially he thinks by his own strength he can handle. That's part of the process. We can't just say that I'll do nothing and I call the Lord. He will tax you. You will try. You will strive. You will get maybe frustrated that what is all this. But you should not accept the so-called inevitable. Gajendra doesn't accept the inevitable. He tries. He sees the crocodile is becoming more and more virulent. He is becoming weaker and weaker. Then the scripture describes something very interesting. See these small little details. He says that all his queens have run away. All his kingdom, they want to help him, but they can't help him. So they are just sitting on the shore and they are just crying. They want to help him. But imagine a whole herd. Had it entered into the river, it would have easily saved him. But they are afraid now. Should we? Shouldn't we? Should we? Shouldn't we? And they are simply on the shore and crying. So Gajendra has a moment of realization. He sees that all these people for whom I have lived my life, now see, relatable, very relatable. All these people for whom I lived my life, for whom I gave everything, now when my time has come, they are simply crying. Nobody is there to help me. That's when he remembers the Lord. See how the story builds up into a profound mystic truth. And when he remembers the Lord, Lord was as if waiting. Instantly he comes. There is a very nice line in one of, I think somebody may remember, Vaikunth chhod ke padhare, Hare Krishna Govinda Hare Murare. Gajgraha, when he cries and he leaves his Vaikuntha and comes down, it's an amazing scene, you know. He instantly comes. He was waiting. So there is a moment when you go through this fall. What is the fall? There are elements in your nature which needs to be purified. You have forgotten them. That's what this king Indradumna has forgotten. His sadhana is incomplete. He is just shutting his eyes to the world. And he is experiencing something very nice inside. That's not enough. So August Rishi, who knows all this, he says, you are so dull outside. You assume a body which is very dull. Actually, in the curse, specifically he says a dull body. So he takes an elephant body. Strength is there, wisdom is there. Elephant is a symbol of strength and wisdom. Crocodile is a symbol of greed. So we can also narrate it symbolically. But we'll come to that in a moment. So he assumes a body, but his inner consciousness is. Now it could be an elephant body, whatever. The stories are symbolic. We are seeing in Bhagavat, all the stories are symbolic, including the cow with one leg, three legs, two legs, or the bull with two legs, then one leg. So it's a symbolic story. We need not take it literally that he has taken an elephant body. Because an elephant is not supposed to remember all the yoga and cry like a... do a Shuddha mantra in Sanskrit. So it's very clearly, he has taken a body which is very dull, given to sensual pleasures, and given to ambition where he becomes a king. But suddenly there is an event which takes place, change of event. Now we go to the symbol part. Elephant is a symbol of wisdom and strength. Now imagine a human being who has gathered wisdom and who has gathered strength. What can be his nemesis? Crocodile? What is crocodile? Crocodile is extreme greed. That's why the mother says ambition is so dangerous. It has been the undoing of many yogis. So Indradumna is meditating and rising high. But there is in him a greed. Very interestingly, now the meaning of the name Indradumna comes. And see, we'll see this so beautiful, small details of the story. He is aspiring to the seat of Indra. He is getting in him the light of Indra. Indradumna literally means the light of Indra. But that is greed. You have to surrender everything. So he is pulled down. August Rishi sees it. He is a seer of the greatest truth. So he says, this is what your state is outwardly. Inwardly you are striving, but this is your outer state. Take the body of an elephant. In fact, it doesn't use the word elephant. He says, take a body which is very dull and, you know, tamasic. So he enters into a tamasic mode, where he's full of all these ambitions. So he gets probably a life where he's enjoying life, like people who are busy gathering money, his ambition. He becomes the king of elephant, not the king of heaven. Trying to. So as a king of elephant, but he has done tapasya that has to bear merit. And then at the end, when all this is exhausted, there comes a moment of crisis, a moment of apocalypse. And he is taken back into the kingdom of the Lord. He goes beyond his seeking for Indra's state. He goes straight to Vaikunth. He is no more like Indra. He becomes like Vishnu. So at the end, all is good because it ends well. Now when you look at this story from the deepest perspective, the take-home point is very simple, this. That's why it's a very profound occult scripture. Many of us, when we come to yoga, sadhana, we are like, you know, Indra Dubne, oh, I'll do meditation, I'll get something very beautiful. So they start. But the Lord knows where are the issues, where are the problems, where are the difficulties. He pulls back. We have to tackle them. We have to deal with those difficulties. We have to take that challenge. We can't just close our eyes to things which are in the nature. So back we come. Sometimes in another life, once mother speaks about someone, there was a person who was megalomaniac, who was having very big plans, big ambitions, but it never succeeded. He lost his balance. Mother says, actually, there is something true in him, but this is not the life when he can fulfill it. Because he's doing it with an intense ego. But he'll come back. He has to go through this curve. So, ultimately, one comes back. Best if in the same life you finish it. If you remember the Lord, you will exhaust it in the same life. If you don't remember the Lord, you take it like, oh, I've fallen, I'm enjoying this. There are people who, driven by ambition, greed for money, they go away. What is it? Greed. Crocodile is catching. Greed for money. Ambition. It is preventing you from advancing. And you fight and struggle, you fight and struggle, you fight and struggle. But it doesn't work. All your university post, all your achievements, all the wealth that you have doesn't help you. That's what an elephant state is. So what does he do? All this challenge helps him. He suddenly remembers, oh, I'm not here for all this. I'm here for the Lord. I don't care now. So he prays to the Lord in a moment of danger. Had he not remembered, he would have probably been gone down the water. Next life he would have come back. But he remembered. And because he remembered the Lord, he finds not only liberation, but goes to the next level. Now this is the story. This is a relatable part. I think it is relatable by anyone who has walked the path of yoga. But now comes very interesting aspect of it. This doesn't matter, doesn't end here. We have been told karmic theory. That's what I keep saying. Karmic theory is one of the most misunderstood. It's like used like a stopgap to everything. So what is the karmic theory? Karmic theory is if you have done a bad karma, you have to suffer. Nobody can do anything about it. So ideally, first of all, Indra Dyumna did no bad karma as such. He didn't deserve to be an elephant from a typical karmic theory. And the Gandharva pulled the leg. Okay, fine. Bad, bad deed. But he should not be punished to be a crocodile. If you go by the typical karmic theory. And then a crocodile and an elephant reaching the highest status. Especially the elephant. How can it be? What karma? What has he exhausted? So all the stories of Bhagavad. And I've been speaking of this even the previous story of Chitraketu. Of that famous Asur. Who is that Asur who was, you know, Vritrasur. Vritrasur was a king who, again, in the Gandharva kingdom, does something, gets a shrap, becomes an Asur. But as an asura also, he is a bhakta. And even Indra can't defeat him. Finally, Vritrasura is killed only when the Lord Vishnu intervenes. And then he allows Indra that, okay, you can kill me. When killed, he goes back to the Lord. How can an asura go back to the Lord? What is all this jumble of things? Very simple. There is a law of karma. Now we are connecting the dot. Law of karma is the normal course of our evolution. Whatever we have done in a certain deed, the extent to which we have evolved, we learn the lesson, we come back, learn the next lesson. Nature is in no hurry. It says you want to take 10 lives to learn one lesson, fair enough. Nature has no issue. So you come back, next life you learn this much, next life you learn this much. So there you get joy and suffering. Suffering is the teacher. It reminds you, look here, boy, you're not doing too well. This, what you thought is the best reward. See how bitter fruit it is. So suffering is a grace and pleasure is a deception. But anyways, people go on in one life, little bit they learn in second life. So do we have to go through it? No. The day you have to learn the lesson, doesn't matter how. It's an open school. It's not a school where you have to go from. It's free progress system. So what is the open school free progress? The day you remember the Lord, which is your original purpose. Now what happens? Very quickly he releases you from the bondage. This is what the Gita says. It says even though, this is exactly what the Gita says. He says when there is an asura, he casts them more and more into the asuric paths. Asura means ambitious person. Dambhi, a person who is vain. So he is cast into more and more asuric births. When it touches rock bottom, then he remembers the Lord. This is how the Gita puts it. And when he remembers the Lord, he is quickly released and taken up by the Lord, and he should be regarded as a saint and no more as somebody who has fallen. Now look at this very strange thing. And there in the Gita, that you fall, and when you fall and start remembering the Lord, then the Gita says, Sri Krishna says, then you should not regard him as a sinner or a bad person. Anyways, you shouldn't regard anybody as that. But you should regard him as a saint, because now he is gone, completed his evolution. So evolution is not from just this point to that. It's a total circle. Now we understand the Zen symbol better. You have to complete. You can't leave things halfway through. There are parts in us which are human and animal-like. They too have to be reckoned. In psychoanalysis, you plunge into the darkness, which is horrible, without knowing the light. In yoga, reckon them, but after you have gained the light. Then you come down. There will be enough opportunity. And then you have to reckon with the darkness inside. Then what do we have to do? Don't be overpowered by it. Don't feel frustrated. Don't think you are done with, you are gone. Because till the last moment, because Gajendra is on the verge of death, we don't know when the Lord will intervene. Only we must call him. Not look at what is being left behind. Gajendra realizes it, that all these people for whom I gave my life, they're just crying. Nobody is coming to help him. Whole army of herd of elephants. Just imagine if they entered. But he sees they are doing nothing. They are simply crying the loss. Many of them have run away actually. So that is a moment when he discovered that all these people whom I thought are my own, for whom I gave my life, for whom I struggled, suffered, that counts for nothing. That is the moment of reckoning of apocalypse, and he starts crying to the Lord. And when you call the Lord and he intervenes, not only he liberates us from the past karma or whatever, it's not liberating from sin. This is a very bad way to put it, sin and guilt. There is no sin and guilt for Indradumna. By the law of karma, there is a slow, long process, laborious process of learning and growing, learning and growing. That's what law of karma is. He liberates us from that chain. There is a chain. It's to take an example that if you are sitting, I don't know if people have experienced, there are those now where you, what is it called? Slides, water slides. I don't know if anybody has experienced it or not. I have. Okay, so in Chennai. So You are, okay, what is slide, what is there? Now when you climb on top, you realize this is too steep down. Okay, fine. Now you have no, you can't, don't want to come back, you know, because it'll look like you are a loser. They say, what is there? We'll go, I'll go down. Now when you start going down, at least I'm sharing my experience. Initially it's fine, but as it picks momentum, you know there is nothing. You can't drown. But suddenly, I mean, it won't happen to others. I'm sure second time you'll enjoy it. But first time I'm saying that there comes a time when you are in that momentum where it's like a free fall. Why you feel that? You know why? And that is the time you remember the Lord. You know everything. But what is it that, because I have analyzed this psychology, that why is it that I felt, I know, technically I know there is nothing. Water is not even, you know, even if I fall inside and nobody is there, though there are people to hold, even if nobody is there, I'll get up and I'll be fine. But still there is a moment when that speed, that intensity created a flutter. And I remembered the mother. Of course, I remembered even before plunging. But that's when you know nothing will happen. Then I realized why this happens. What is that moment when the Lord is nearest you? It was like an eye-opener. That moment is when you feel you have no more control over anything. It's not about what may happen. I know nothing will happen. My mind knows. But I feel I'm not in control of anything. See, the mind has this tendency to control. Things should be the way I want them to be. They are not. So it was such a lesson. I learned it for life. That look here. You never are in control of anything. It's an illusion. That's what is the illusion. And as long as we feel, the ego feels it is in control, it's the master. Now, we should not draw a wrong conclusion. Okay, I lose my control, I do anything and go. Though there are yogas like that. There are paths like that. But that's not what is recommended. That's a very dangerous path. We are not talking of that. But, I mean, all the part of Tantra is precisely that. You enter into that darkness and energy. Left hand Tantra. You say, I can't control anything. You let go. Now, this is a very dangerous form. This is not recommended. But, basically, there comes a time. So, you give your best. You try. That's the recommended path. But there comes a time when you feel that I'm not in control of anything. People whom I call my own, look here, they are enjoying life. Or they are crying, but then nobody can help me. That is the time when you are ready for the Lord. So you'll reach that point through the journey of karma. And when you reach that point, as Savitri says beautifully, few lines. An hour arrives when fail all nature's means. Cast out from their protecting ignorance. Describing Savitri. That day she, like a time came when nothing can help her. An hour arrives. Is an absolute supernatural darkness falls on man sometimes when he draws near to God. This is the story of Gajendra. Narrated in Savitri in his own andaz. An absolute supernatural darkness. It's a supernatural darkness because it's created by what? Agastya Rishi and Lord Vishnu, obviously in the Noah of everything. And poor fellow, his whole life is at stake. His kingdom is gone. His wives are gone. His children have run away. An absolute supernatural darkness falls on man sometimes when he draws near to God. An hour arrives when fail all nature's means, cast out from the protecting ignorance. Then what should be done? He at length, he is man. He at length must cast from him his surface soul and be the ungarbed entity within. That hour had now fallen on Savitri. So she had a choice to make. All of us get this, you know, when life is all doing hunky-dory, we should be careful. Maybe divine is sleeping, waiting. But suddenly a moment comes when we really, nothing is helping us. Same thing we see in Draupadi story. Whether the story is in the original Mahabharata or not, that's not relevant. Very powerful story. Shobindu narrates this to Nirodha. I mean, in his dream dialogue.
So he says, you know, what was the state? Draupadi calls Krishna with different names. He doesn't come. Suddenly she uses a name. He says, O thou who art dwelling within my heart. And then he appears and Dushasan is able to do nothing. That's why the prayer of Gajendra is very interesting. I can't read it now, but maybe later on, if possible, I'll post it. There is a way he addresses the Supreme Lord. And he speaks of him as somebody who is in his own heart. Very clearly, he's not talking about an elephant. I mean, it's clearly a symbol of a yogi who has fallen. He is now enjoying life, he is ambitious, he is like a king, but in his consciousness, he is like an elephant. So he suddenly wakes up and he prays that you are in my heart. Come to my rescue, help me. And the Lord arrives and not only liberates him, but because he has done all this sadhana behind, you get the merit. So this whole idea of karma is a blind wheel in which you are caught up by reward and punishment. God is not a judge. He is either a teacher, guru, or he is the divine mother, supreme grace. You can go through the teaching tutorial method where you learn, grow, or you invoke the grace. When you invoke the grace, he is bandhan mukta. All pash, all that is there till then gets broken. And what is interesting, as I said, which we can close, Gajendra is not only released from his pash, from the crocodile, from greed, from all that. See how he takes away the greed. He shows him, look here, you wanted the kingdom, you wanted wives, you wanted enjoyment, family, see. All is useless now. So he's not only released from these things, he is become, because of his past tapasya which he has done, he is taken straight away to the abode of the Lord and he gets what is described, as far as I know, I may be mistaken, the only person who is given sarupya mukti. He becomes just like the Lord but with four hands. That's how it describes. Now I'll tell the last part. I know this for sure. When you serve the divine, don't ask me how and why. When you serve the divine, people often wonder, you know, there are two types of approaches. One is, oh, too much work and I want to relax. Divine gives you freedom. But the other is, he gives you more and more work. Mother was asked this. Mother, when, in fact, Navjaji would say that you are jumping four bars, then if you cross, you know, 4 feet high bar, then he will not say relax, he will raise the bar to 5 feet. You cross 5 feet, he'll raise it to 6 feet. Now, when you serve the Lord and you want to serve the Lord, he will give you more and more work, more and more work, and more hands to take care of that. You won't even get to know what seemed impossible. Actually, you can see those hands in the subtle world. So this is not just an exaggeration that he got the same rupa. Bhagavad is saying nothing which is to be taken as exaggeration. It's not a way of saying that, okay, he got four hands, he could do more work. You can actually see the four hands. And these hands are doing different works. Of course, it's not like all the time you are seeing, but you know that there are as much work you take of the Lord, as many hands. And that's what ultimately, Sahasra Bhuja Devi, that's what it means. So get as many hands, as much strength, as much power, as you grow sincere, as much wisdom, that comes to you. So this is what is the mukti given to all who, like Gajendra, keep the trust and go through whatever they have to go through, even when they suffer a fall. He is a good king. He is regarded as a good king, elephant king. Though he was a king, he was a good king. Because he is, after all, you know, got some learning lesson in the previous life. And then when crisis comes, most important, if you remember the Lord at all times, wonderful. You will not get the crisis. That's how Kabir says. It will come, but you will escape it. Like, you will not be affected. That's what Mother speaks of as the sunlit path. It will come. Outside life, whatever may happen. But you are protected inside and you go. But if you forget and there is a crisis and you fall, still, don't worry. Keep your access code always intact. Remember, 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 ma, ma, ma. And the day you remember with all the, when nothing is working, all you have tried to run away from a situation, run away from people, run away from this, that, nothing works. Then he says, wait, don't run away. Be with me. And when you are with the Lord, there is something called, nowadays people talk of instant karma, I speak of instant mukti. It immediately you are released and you can be with him as he is engaging with the world. Lord Vishnu is always engaged in the world. And just like him in every other respect. So this is the story, beautiful story of Gajendra and the crocodile, Jayamaa.